Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome to episode 94 of Geek Town Radio. We're back this week with Matt.
Hi, how are you doing, David?
I'm right, how are you?
I'm doing there, actually. I've been coughing a lot less, so that means my cold is hopefully going. So that's always nice.
It's hanging around that cold, doesn't it?
Yeah, a couple of weeks. So, doctor said it should be getting better. So, that's a good sign.
Good.
Yeah, I've been pretty good.
So what have you been up to?
I signed up today for a trial for PlayStation Now. I don't know if you've heard of that before.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's their rental sort of thing.
It's basically like it's a service on the PlayStation 4. I think it's on the PlayStation 3 as well. It's on the PC now as well. What it basically allows you to do is it's a little bit like Netflix for games, but with PS3 games. It needs a good internet connection because I signed up for it and I got a game started and then I had to leave it. Then I came back to it and then it wouldn't load. So
great.
Yeah. But it's a bit like that. It's got all of the God of War games, I think. It's got a lot of the Ratchet and Clank games. It's got the 3 Uncharted games. It's got Last of Us. It's got The Last of Us Left Behind, which was a DLC.
Oh, yeah.
Basically, just a whole bunch of PS3 kind of classic games, I guess you can call them. And it's sort of, yeah, you do the 7-day trial, which is, of course, a week, and then you pay £13 a month, and then you can basically stream all those games as much as you want. Basically, like how Netflix does it, you know, you pay the £6 a month and then you stream however much you like. So it's quite good. I just hope it works enough. I'll see how I feel at the end of the trial. Have you ever tried it before?
I've not. There was a PC version of it, not directly related to PlayStation, which put various PC games on, and I tried that, which is a similar sort of system in that you're not installing anything locally, it streams everything over a network, and it was fine. But yeah, you've got that problem with you need a decent internet connection for it to actually work.
What I think they should maybe do is change it so that you download those games, and then of course once your trial runs out or once your subscription isn't active, they would take your licenses away from the games that you've downloaded, because then you could kind of, you know, play them on demand, which would be pretty cool. But yeah, it's a good service if you jumped onto PlayStation 4 and you have a good internet and you didn't play any PS3 games, which I didn't really, so that's kind of why I went to try it.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's good. I just hope I can get it to work. Because of course it's harder to stream games than it is to film like shows and films and stuff on Netflix.
Yeah.
The Walking Dead's finishing today until February.
Yes.
It's been a pretty good season. Of course, we have our podcast that myself and David and Sophie and Chris do.
Yeah.
Which is on my website, entertainmenttalk.org. The DC shows are back as well. I also do a podcast for that. That's not with you, David. That's with a guy called Robert who does some stuff for my website. Those have been pretty good. We got the crossover this week, haven't we? So
yes, yeah, the crossover. I mean, it's funny because a lot of people were, you know, talking about, oh, you know, being so far behind, and we're actually only about a week behind now.
I think it's two, yeah, because they finished their mid-seasons last week, which is the episode 9.
Yeah,
in the USA. So yeah, we're two behind, which, you know, is better than, I think on Blind Spot we're like 5 episodes behind,
something like that. Yeah,
yeah, because I looked on the other week and I'm sure it said episode 7 and we're on episode like 4.
Yeah.
Or it was episode 3 or something. I watched the Ghostbusters, the remake, the one with the females this year. I absolutely loved it. I thought it was awesome. I thought the kind of modern look for the Ghostbusters is really cool.
Had you seen the original?
I did, yeah. I saw the original too, which we're not really going to get Ghostbusters 3 now. So it's for those people that are moaning like, oh, you should do it with the original guys. It's not really possible, is it?
Well, no, given one of them dead anyway.
yeah. So which one died? I can't remember.
Harold Ramis died, who was also the main kind of, I think he actually was the director on that movie as well. Okay. So, or if not, he was certainly heavily involved in the, he was the director on the second one, possibly. I know he went on and did directing afterwards. Plus, you've got to get Bill Murray to come back, and that's a job in itself. So it would be nice to get some cameos off them, maybe.
Did you see this one?
I haven't seen this one yet, so.
Okay.
Are there cameos?
There's a couple of cameos. I won't, like, spoil them on anything, but... Yeah, it was just a great film. I had a lot of fun with it. And I was going in with a kind of open mind because some people were like, this film is really bad. And some people were like, this film is really good. I was like, okay, I don't know quite what to think, but I'll watch it. And about half an hour in, I was like, yeah, I'm really enjoying this. This is really fun.
Okay, cool.
So yeah, it was really cool. Another film I watched was X-Men Apocalypse. I don't know if you've seen that.
Yes, I've seen that, yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty good. Just on the level of like, fine, the good.
Yes. Kind of thing. Yeah. I'd be with you on that. It was okay. It wasn't brilliant. It was all right.
In no way was it terrible. It wasn't like bad. It wasn't like Civil War kind of good.
Nowhere near.
So that was pretty good. Been watching some iZombie about halfway through second season or just over halfway through second season. Where are you on that show?
iZombie. Oh, I'm way, way behind on that.
Part of me wants to be like, just catch up, but it's not coming back till April. So I was like, should I pace myself a little bit more? Should I? But, you know, yeah, that's been quite good as well. Watched another episode yesterday of Orphan Black. So that was quite good. I think about the same point because I started Orphan Black and iZombie at the same time.
Right.
So I'm like halfway through a second season and that's really good. You caught up with that?
I'm completely up to date with Orphan Black.
It's four seasons so far, is it?
Five, I think, so far.
Okay.
Mentioning Orphan Black, by the way, if you want to go on to Bex Trista's Trista Bites YouTube channel and make comments on her videos about the fact that she looks like Tatiana Maslany, it'll really wind her up, so go and do that.
But yeah, that's been pretty good as well. The episode yesterday I enjoyed quite a lot. Do you have the Xbox Live Gold?
Yes I do.
One of this month's free games is Sleeping Dogs, which is a bit like a budgety, not in a bad way, budgety kind of GTA set is it China, Hong Kong, Japan?
One of those countries. I think
it's Hong Kong. Yeah. So it's a little bit on like a smaller scale, but it's still really enjoyable and still has some, it's a bit more of a like, GTA is a bit more focused on its shooting set pieces, where this is like focused on like the fighting and the martial arts kind of stuff. And it's really cool. You go to like this, you actually go to this sort of like martial arts, not school, but you have this like, the character has this friend that's there. And whenever you pick up a new statue, you learn a new fighting move.
Yes, I remember. It's been a long time since I played it because it came out ages ago on PC. So I played.
I think it came out 2012 or something.
Yeah, I played it on PC when it came out.
They did a remaster, which is the version that's free this month with the Xbox's Game of Gold. Yeah, you learn some new stuff, and then there's like as you progress through the game, there's certain fighting moves that don't work on certain enemies. Like there's this really kind of not big guy, but like kind of chubbier guy, and if you try to like grapple him, he'll grab you and he'll throw you on the floor. So you've got to be careful with that kind of stuff. But yeah, it's really fun.
Yeah.
And I've also been rewatching Lost as well because I just...
Okay.
I felt like it. I wanted to. And it's holding up really well considering it ended 6 years ago, almost 7 years ago.
Yeah.
It's good. Which was one of the biggest shows ever made, of course. Lots of people... I don't know any... I would be kind of shocked if I asked someone if they'd heard of Lost and they said no. I'd be kind of...
I think everybody must have heard of Lost.
Yeah, at least like heard of it. You've watched it, right?
Oh, yeah. Seen it all the way through.
So. Some people do like the ending, some people don't, but it's... It's up to you what you think, but...
It was okay. But,
yeah. I just love kind of like the mystery of it and stuff. That's kind of one of the main big points that I kind of like about it. And then it's a little bit like the kind of ragtag group of survivors type thing as well.
Yeah.
A little bit like what kind of Walking Dead has, those sort of shows. Yeah, that's what I've been doing.
Yes, I've had a bit of a film week this week, actually.
Yeah.
Because Adam, who very occasionally does the podcast, has been down for the weekend. So we went to town and went and saw Sully, which is the movie about the guy that landed the plane on the Hudson a few years ago.
Mm.
Stars Tom Hanks. Really enjoyable, quite sort of interesting. It shows all of the event itself, which was, you know, very, very short, but a lot of the movie is concentrating on stuff that happened afterwards. And they pretty much spent 12 months defending him taking that action in various tribunals and stuff to prove, because originally they'd been saying that there was a possibility he could have made it back to an airport. And he was categorically saying, I know this plane. I know what happened. There is no way it could have happened. You know, there is no way we would have made it back. So a lot of it is about that. But I mean, it's Tom Hanks. It's a brilliantly put together movie. It's really interesting. Completely not sort of genre in any way, shape or form, but really good fun. Mm. So, well, not good fun. It's probably the wrong phrase. It's really, really well put together. Really interesting film. So I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, I'll have to watch that because I've heard some good things. And you've heard me mention Bold Move before, haven't you? They did a Bold Movies podcast for that.
So yes.
I'm going to try and do that as well.
Yes.
Some people also said that he could probably play a version of Sully from like Uncharted if they did an Uncharted film. That would be pretty cool.
I'm not sure he's quite gruff enough, you know, for Sully.
He could do something, you know.
But certainly the look, he looks right.
Mm.
So yeah, what's that?
Just a case of who would play Drake himself.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, some people said Nathan Fillion? They said
Nathan Fillion's a bit old now, unfortunately. He probably needs somebody a bit younger. But yeah, Nathan Fillion would have been brilliant for that role. But yeah, so watch that. Watch Jason Bourne as well, which is the latest of the Bourne movies, which was fine. It's perfectly good fun. It's well put together. It's pretty much what you expect from a Jason Bourne movie directed by Paul Greengrass. You know, it's a continuation of all the other stuff that he's done previously.
Mm.
And it's perfectly well put together. There's some great action sequences in it. It's a fairly solid plot. It moves at a fairly quick pace. So... Good fun though.
I was going to watch Jason Bourne the other day, but I was like, I don't know if I'm quite in that mood. I will watch it. I just wasn't quite in that sort of mood. And then I was like, I kind of want Jack Bauer back instead of Jason Bourne.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
And then Suicide Squad, which I've seen the original version before, but this is the extended cut, which you can get on DVD. And weirdly, you can't seem to get the extended cut from Sky. You can only... I got it off Amazon because Jason Bourne was on Sky, but they've got the Suicide Squad on Sky, but they don't seem to have the extended cut version on Sky. So I had to buy that off Amazon. And you can buy it streaming off Amazon. It's still got the same problems that the original film had in that it's fine, but it's very much a film of two halves. The vignettes that introduce everybody at the start do very much seem like they're shunted on. And then you've got the actual movie, which is sort of the other two thirds of the film, and they don't gel at all well. It really does.
There's some very good parts to the film,
like
Harley Quinn and Will Smith as Deadshot.
Yeah.
I haven't gotten your opinion on the Joker. Did you like him?
Yeah, that was the interesting thing with this. There's a lot more Jared Leto in this version. I quite like it. I mean, it's a different take on the Joker. It's very much done this sort of Bonnie and Clyde kind of thing with Joker and Harley. It's interesting to take that sort of loving relationship between them. Although part of me does want to see him be slightly more abusive than he actually is, in the same way that he was. If you go and look at the original cartoon, the Adventures of Batman cartoons, the relationship that formed, you know, because that's where Harley Quinn comes from, the relationship that formed between the two of them then, I think that's a really good way of doing it. And maybe they just thought they couldn't get away with it in the movie version, but you know, that was in a kids cartoon and they got away with it there. So but I think Jared Leto's fine. He sort of needs a bit more
Mark Hamill
working.
To voice acting.
Mark Hamill to voice acting.
Just do him as the body version, then have Mark Hamill's voice at the top.
Yeah, possibly.
Yeah, that'd be pretty cool.
But yeah, I mean, I think it's a better cut, the extended cut, than the original.
Are they going to keep doing this? Because I've seen some people be like, well, I paid for this in the cinema. Why am I not getting
the full version? Yeah.
All of it. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know.
And then some, you know how some people feel about like DLC? They're like, oh, is this a DLC version of the DC films? Because they did it with Batman as well.
Yeah, they did.
I'm like, that's worryingly kind of true. It's a little bit like that.
It is. I don't know. They seem to be doing it with all the DC movies. I don't know, because it may be that they are releasing the version in the theater that they think is the definitive version, and then everybody complains about it and they use the extended cut to add bits back in so people complain about it less, possibly. So I don't know. Maybe if they get it right the first time, then they won't carry on releasing extended cut versions. So yeah. I don't know. We'll see when Wonder Woman comes out. But
what ones have we got? We got a solo Batman film. We got Justice League.
There's Justice League 2,
I heard about the other day, which got pushed back a little bit to make room for Batman.
Yeah, there's Batman. There's a solo Aquaman movie, a solo Flash movie, if the Flash can stop losing its director, because it's on its about its fourth now.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. Okay. They've been through 3 or 4 directors on that already. So I don't know. We'll see whether that ever actually makes it to screen. But there is a Flash movie due.
I know it's a bit more Marvel, but I know Gambit's having a lot of problems. I don't know if that film's still being... Is it still being made?
I don't know. I don't know whether it's dropped off the schedule.
I've heard some bad problems. And then you've got... Who else? They said Harley Quinn's going to get one. They said the Joker should get one, but then they should really do Harley Quinn and the Joker. That would make a lot more sense.
If they're gonna, I think having just the Joker on his own, I don't think would work. I think it would be Joker and Harley Quinn in a movie.
Yeah.
Joker, he's such a difficult character to pull off, and I don't think he could carry an entire film on his own.
Yeah, you've got to be the right level of kind of crazy and psychotic, but still reasonably reasonable.
Yeah. It's tricky. I think a little bit like a
kind of if Negan went a bit insane.
Yeah.
Kind of. Yeah. Like that.
Without
the baseball bat.
but over on the other side, on the Marvel side, we had the Spider-Man Homecoming trailer as well was released.
That was really cool. Yeah.
I thought that was really nice. The new Spider-Man suit with the wings and stuff underneath, with the webbed kind of wings under the suit, which were quite cool.
Which I'm excited for the game as well, which I don't know when that's out.
That's out next year. But a new decent Spider-Man game would be good, because they've been a bit hit and miss. Some of them have been brilliant.
It's going to be Insomniac, who did, it's called Ratchet & Clank, and they did Sunset Overdrive. So they've got a good history.
Yeah.
Because Amazing Spider-Man 2 wasn't very good.
No.
In fact, I don't remember finishing it, so it can't have been very good.
That's looking good. There's a lot of Tony Stark in that trailer. A lot.
Yeah, and some people are kind of complaining about that, but I'm like, he's his mentor. He's not going to be like taking over the film. He's going to definitely be more of a mentor role.
Yeah, I think they just used a lot of bits of him in that trailer. I don't think he's actually going to be in it as much as that trailer made it seem like he's going to be in it, I would guess. But I mean, Robert Downey Jr. on screen, he's always brilliant, particularly as Tony Stark. So I'm all for having more of a minute. So, we'll see.
Yep.
TV wise, there were two particular shows that I saw this week. This Is Us, which started on Channel 4, which we've been talking about for a while because it's been this huge, huge hit in America. And we'd said repeatedly that the only thing I really knew about it was the fact that it was a bunch of people that were born on the same day. And it seemed like this sort of family drama-y thing. It has this beautiful twist at the end of the first episode, which if people are going to watch it, I won't kind of say what it is, but it does have this lovely little twist at the end of the first episode, which I really missed and didn't see coming at all. So, and it's well acted. It's very well put together. And it is. It's basically a drama of a bunch of people that are at various points in their sort of family life. You've got Justin Hartley from Smallville in there as well, playing an actor that's stuck on this sort of soap, which he hates, called the Manny. And he's sort of forced to take his shirt off at a moment's notice and this sort of thing. He's basically there as sort of eye candy, and he's getting a bit sick about the fact that he's stuck on this show and he's not a proper kind of actor because he's doing this. So that's all kind of really interesting. It's really well put together. Milo Ventimiglia is fantastic in it as well. I really enjoyed it. So it's one to go and watch. Again, it's not very genre, but it is an interesting looking show, and it does have this interesting little twist at the end of it, which I really like. So that's on Channel 4. I think it's on Tuesday nights. Could be wrong about that, but I think it's on Tuesday nights.
Yeah, I've seen it advertised a lot, because when Channel 4 or E4 get a big thing, like Timeless,
yeah,
they like to advertise it a lot.
If you hadn't noticed, you haven't been watching TV, that Timeless is all over the place. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Westworld, which finished this week.
Westworld, yes. The big American show.
Yes, the huge American show. It's been, I think, HBO's largest rated show, basically, for the network, once you average them all out, once you average the episodes out. So it's ridiculous how popular that show has been. It's not very straightforward to follow. It's something have to watch very intently. You can't kind of be messing around on Facebook in between. It's really something that you have to concentrate on. But yeah, I thought it came to a very kind of interesting conclusion. I really liked it.
It's just a shame it won't be back until 2018. So.
What I like about it is the fact that, you know, you've got a number of shows which are dealing with this awakening of consciousness in artificial life like this, and you've got humans. And they each approach it slightly differently in the way that they are, you know, bringing consciousness to the fore in those robots or those synths, or, you know, the hosts in the case of Westworld, and how they actually get there, and sort of talks about what makes humanity and what makes something human. And I thought the way Westworld approached that was quite interesting. So I'm looking forward to that coming back. I thought they did a really, really nice job with it.
Yeah, they said it's got roughly 5-season run in mind. So that's a good target.
Yeah.
So it will be, will it come back the year Game of Thrones finishes? I think so. Because they said 2 more years of Game of Thrones. So it's 2017 and 18.
Yes, so it probably will.
So yeah, maybe.
Yeah, maybe it will.
Maybe the October of that year or something.
Yeah, maybe.
And then, because Game of Thrones is usually like April or June or whatever, because
it'll
be
later.
It's
going to be a bit later. Yeah, so it's going to be sort of June-ish, July-ish probably. So yeah, we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah. And then they've got things like The Leftovers, which is coming back next year, which I think has been put out for March or something.
Yes, I'm not sure. They've got other shows coming as well, but we'll get on to those.
I enjoyed Westworld a lot. It was really cool.
Yeah, but it's something you really have to concentrate on.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Mm. But yeah, a very intricately weaved together show that well worth watching if you haven't caught it yet. You can get it on Sky Atlantic, on Sky Catch Up, and it's on Now TV if you've got Now TV as well. So worth getting. So yeah, blow some money on a Now TV box. So they're only 20 quid. So. Okay, with those done, let's move on to some film and TV news. So the first story this week kind of came out of nowhere, and I really wasn't expecting it, but Strike Back is coming back. The Sky One Cinemax series that starred Sullivan Stapleton and Philip Winchester is coming back without Sullivan Stapleton or Philip Winchester. This isn't the first time they've actually done the show without those two as the lead, although they did the majority of the series, because if you remember it, the original first season starred Richard Armitage and Andrew Lincoln before, like, Richard Armitage left and went to Middle Earth and Andrew Lincoln went off to fight zombies. So so it's not the first time they've had a major change of cast on the show. I mean, you know, Stonebridge and Scott were a great duo, and they're interestingly, with this new version of it, they're not trying to go down the same kind of buddy cop route. They're talking about it being more a kind of Fast and Furious group dynamic between a bunch of different people. So they've got a team. Basically, the idea is that Section program has been disavowed and abandoned, but there is a notorious terrorist that has a brutal breakout of prison, so they reinstate the Section program as a way of going after them and trying to catch them. Part of this new group is a guy called Daniel Mac McAllister, who's played by Warren Brown, who was in Luther. He was Luther's sidekick in most of Luther.
The lad,
yeah.
The shorter guy,
yeah. So
he's, yeah, I think I know who you're talking about.
He's sort of one of the main leads. Sergeant Samuel Wyatt, who is Daniel McPherson, who's from the Shannara Chronicles. Natalie Roberts, who is played by Roxanne McKean, who was in Game of Thrones. Is Roxanne McKean a Hollyoaks person as well?
I don't think so. And okay. I know the cast pretty well.
Unless
it was like in 1995 when I was a year old. Hollyoaks started the year after I was born, so I couldn't quite watch it from there. But no, I don't think she's from...
Yes, Hollyoaks. She is. She's Hollyoaks.
Is she?
Yes, played Louise Summers in Hollyoaks.
Oh, yeah, I know the character who you just mentioned. Yes. I never know who she was. So
she's from Hollyoaks, and she was in Game of Thrones as well. And Gracie Novin is the other character. She's played by Alin Sommerwater from Neighbours, apparently. So they've roped in a few soap stars to as part of it as well. So it's an interesting kind of mix.
It's like when you have, what was Lincoln's name from The Hundred?
Ricky Whittle, that's the guy's name.
Ricky Whittle, that's it.
Got let go and had a very big bust up with the people that were behind the scenes, the directors or the showrunner of the 100, for the fact that they basically rotated his character.
He did an interview with, you remember Ben Bateman? He did that guest appearance on the Walking Dead podcast. He had an interview with him on AfterBuzz. He did it a while ago, and it kind of talked a bit about what happened with him on the 100 and stuff.
He was not happy about what happened to his character on that show. But you know, he's gone on to bigger and better things. He's now in what is probably going to be a fairly major drama with American Gods. So you know, all good things. So the Return of Strike Back is being filmed next year. I think it starts filming early next year, so we're either going to see it late next year, probably the autumn season, or it may be that it's 2018 as well. Don't know yet, but interesting one to come back.
How long was the original, like the original four? I think it was like four or five seasons.
The original show, there was one season with Richard Armitage and Andrew Lincoln, then I think there were four seasons with the other guys, with Winchester and Stapleton, Stonebridge and Scott. So, I mean, it's kind of interesting that they decided to bring that back. And again, it's a co-production between Sky One and Cinemax, as it was before. So, next news story we've got is on Star Trek Discovery. This actually broke a while back, but we sort of skipped over it. They added a couple of new cast members in the form of Doug Jones and Anthony Rapp, who are the two people that they've cast. And they are both going to be crew members on the USS Discovery. Doug Jones, do you know that name?
No.
Right, okay. You will have seen him, because he played Abe Sapien in the Hellboy movies. He was Cochise in Falling Skies. He plays the Ancient in The Strain. He played the extremely creepy gentleman in Buffy, the Vampire Slayer, for the episode Hush.
Okay.
He's basically, if you have a guy that's on a TV show that's under a lot of prosthetic makeup, the chances are there's a very good chance it's Doug Jones underneath it. He specializes in doing stuff which is under large amounts of prosthetics. So he's going to be playing an alien character, obviously, as you'd expect. So more prosthetics. And he's a science officer on board the Discovery called Lieutenant Saru. Then you've got Anthony Rapp, who isn't somebody I know. He's been in a few episodes of The Nick. He was in the movie Road Trip. He was in the film Rent. He's very, very well known as a stage actor. He was one of the originators of one of the parts in Rent, which is a huge theatre musical. He's very well known and very well respected in that sort of field. But he's popped up in the odd TV thing and the odd movie thing. So he's now playing Lieutenant Statmetz, apparently, is the character's name.
Okay.
And he's another Starfleet science officer on the USS Discovery and an astromycologist, who is apparently somebody who studies Earth-derived fungi in space. So, interesting. Don't know why. He's also they said when they were developing the show that they were going to have an openly gay character on the show as well. So, and he will play the openly gay character that they mentioned that they were going to add in. That was part of Brian Fuller, because I think he got some criticism over the fact that he wanted, I don't know whether it was because one of the characters were gay on the show, and a lot of people criticized him for it. And when he was writing
did this happen as well with the Star Trek I feel like I remember a similar story about the Star Trek film.
Yes, yeah, there was a thing with Star Trek film with where they made Sulu a gay character.
Yeah,
and George Takei wasn't overly happy with that because I mean, obviously George Takei is an openly gay guy, but wasn't happy about the fact that they turned Sulu gay in the films because Sulu, to him, he said Sulu was always a straight character. Yeah, and he's like, he was sort of like, just because I'm gay, I don't see why you should turn the character gay. You know, I'm perfectly happy, you know, it'd be great to have an openly gay character in the movie, but I didn't think it should have been Sulu, was what he basically said. So yes, there was stuff like that. This was because Brian Fuller, I think, he got some criticism over having talked about wanting, I think, a gay character in Star Trek Deep Space Nine, because he used to write on Star Trek Deep Space Nine. So this was kind of a middle finger to all the people that wrote in hate mail about it then. He was like, I'm going to put an openly gay character on Star Trek. Plus, you know, it's 2016, 2017. It's, why wouldn't there be, you know? So,
yeah.
So yes, there's that. Brian Fuller's no longer involved in the show. Originally, it'd been said he was still going to be involved in the story process, but he had to step out because of American Gods, which we were talking about earlier, which is also his show. He's actually showrunner on that. And he was supposed to be showrunner on this, but he just said, I just can't do both. And originally, he was going to still be involved with the story stuff. And it sounds like they may still be using a lot of his story, like outlines and things. But he's said he's no longer involved in production or post-production. All he's done is given the materials he's already put together and hopes that it's helpful to them. Curious to see what they do. I have my number if they need me, and absolutely I'm there for them. So, you know, he's not officially involved anymore.
It does make me wonder how Robert Kirkman's doing so many things at the same time. No. And then I've seen a lot of articles about George R. R. Martin saying, oh, you know, this new book's going to be bittersweet and all this kind of stuff. And people are like, just finish it.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy.
It's weird. Although this guy's been working on this book so long and...
Yeah. I think with Kirtland, though, is the fact that he's not actually, he is doing various projects and involved in various things, but he's not actually showrunner on Walking Dead. Whereas in this case, I think Brian Fuller was supposed to be showrunner on American Gods and on Star Trek Discovery. And that's a lot to take on, because they're both major, major projects. So, you know, I don't blame him really for stepping away. There was also another announcement a while back about Michelle Yeoh, who is the star of Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. She has joined the show. We originally thought that she was going to join as the lead character, who is a lieutenant on the USS Discovery. Turns out she's not. She's actually in charge of a starship called the Starship Shenzhou. Note that it's called the Starship Shenzhou and not the USS Shenzhou. So that sounds like it's... Shenzhou sounds Romulan or Riemann to me, I think. It's not Klingon. So I would say that's Romulan or Riemann. But they're saying that ship will play a big role in the first season. So it's possible she's playing a villain, maybe, which would be interesting.
So with this Star Trek, can I kind of just watch it, or should I like watch the films?
No, I think it's disconnected from the films. It sits in the original TV timeline.
Okay.
But I don't think they're going to write it in a way that you need to really know anything other than what you already know from pop culture. I don't think a little bit of a
spin-off kind of thing.
I don't think because it's set before the first flight of Kirk on the Enterprise.
Okay.
So it's set before the original series, the original 60s series. And I think they said it's about 10 years before that. So it's not directly connected to any specific thing. It's connected to some stuff in Star Trek lore, but nothing that you would need to actually know about to enjoy the show, I don't think.
Okay.
So I think you're fine.
Yeah.
Otherwise, that's an awful lot of Star Trek to get through.
Yes.
But since it's set before everything, I think you're okay. There'll obviously be nods and stuff in it to people that do know the Star Trek history. But that's due to arrive on Netflix in the UK in May 2017. That's landing.
Pretty soon.
So, yeah.
Should
be good. A final news story we've got this week. HBO are teaming up with J.J. Abrams' Bad Robot and a writer called Javier Goulon, and they are developing a new space drama together, apparently. But no great surprise that they're doing this, because Bad Robot are partly responsible for Westworld. So I've seen a couple of names for it. It's called either Glare or Tilted Glare, possibly the names for the project. It's not much known about it at the moment, other than it's a sci-fi odyssey exploring the colonization of another planet. That's all we really know about it. Javier Goulon is, it's the first time he's written a TV show, but he wrote a spec script called 478 for a feature film, which got a lot of buzz in Hollywood, and he's currently being made, or has recently been made, into a movie which due out next year, I think, with Schwarzenegger in the lead. So a fairly big project. He's written a couple of feature scripts as well. He's just done an adaptation of the sci-fi noir novel called The Dark Side, which is set on a prison colony on the moon. So, you know, he's got some experience of sci-fi. He's got some experience of writing. He apparently has a deal with Bad Robot, which is why they're kind of working together. So, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see whether they can replicate the same success of Westworld.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like something that should work. So, you know, it's HBO, J.J. Abrams, Bad Robot.
Yeah, and I mean... the thing with Bad Robot stuff is you forget they're a very hit and miss company when it comes to TV shows. I mean, they've had, when they hit well, but even when they miss, they tend to be kind of interesting shows. Because, I mean, you've got Alias, Lost, Fringe, which wasn't a huge show, but was brilliant. Person of Interest, as well as theirs. Alcatraz.
I still need to watch Person of Interest.
Person of Interest.
It's been on my mind for so long, but it's...
You've got Alcatraz and Revolution were both theirs. Revolution only ran for a couple of seasons, but again, very interesting show. Alcatraz was an interesting idea. Almost Human, which I think was a great show and really well put together, but unfortunately didn't take off. Believe was one of Bad Robot's. 11-22-63 was one of theirs, which was great as well. That was only a limited series.
That's pretty good, yeah.
I think part of the problem with the Bad Robot stuff is it's not really found... They've tried them on network TV, and I don't think they work particularly well, because I don't think a lot of their stuff works on network TV. Mm. Whereas Westworld being on HBO, they have an awful lot more freedom. And I think this relationship between HBO and Bad Robot would be great for both of them, because I think those sort of shows will work much better on something like HBO. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to this, because they make some really interesting kind of out-of-the-box kind of ideas. So I'm looking forward to seeing a few more of that. Should be good. Okay, so that's all the news for this week. Next up, we have an interview. The interview this week is with the Man in the High Castle director of photography, Gonzalo Amat. Gonzalo is currently the cinematographer for Amazon's critically acclaimed series, The Man in the High Castle. Have you seen any of that? I know it's an Amazon series.
I do intend to watch it, but I haven't got to it yet.
Yeah, brilliant, brilliant show. It's due back for a second season on Friday the 16th. So this Friday, actually, it's coming back. It's beautifully, beautifully shot. I mean, it's a great storyline as well. But yeah, the whole recreation of Nazi Germany, but in America. It's basically set in the sort of 50s and 60s. After Germans had won the Second World War and had taken over half of America, and Japan had taken over the other half. So you've got this really odd, interesting, dystopian kind of visuals going on. So it's really, really beautiful. But he's worked on that. He worked on Paranormal Activity and the Mark ones. He also worked on Person of Interest for a while as well. So he was a really interesting person to talk to. We talk a lot about the Man in the High Castle, a little bit about Person of Interest. Here's an interview with Gonzalo. We'll talk afterwards with some air dates.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, Gonzalo. How you doing?
Good. Very well. What about yourself?
Good. I'm good, thanks. thank you for coming on and spending a bit of time talking. That's pretty good of you. So yeah, you're based in New York. Do you want to start off by just giving me a bit of background about how you got into the industry?
Sure. I guess, you know, I was always kind of really interested in like literature and photography and stuff like that. So, you know, back when I was in high school, I sort of started taking like photography courses and stuff like that. And someone mentioned to me, maybe you should look into filmmaking, because that's, even though my family was always very fond of films, they never really thought that, you know, one should be a filmmaker by itself. You know what I mean? Yeah. So I started to look into it, and I kind of really got really interested. Even though I didn't study like a college degree, I ended up studying afterwards, like in the AFI and London Film School. Yeah. I did always thought that it would be a good way of putting literature and photography together, you know, which is sort of the way I got into it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, after that, after film school, I just started working and always sort of pursuing narrative stuff as the base of what I do. And that's sort of where I am right now, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're obviously not, I detect from your accent, not a New York native. So
No.
Where did you grow up originally?
I grew up in Mexico City.
Okay, cool.
I was born in Mexico. My family's from Spain, so they moved to Mexico in the 70s.
Okay.
Yeah, and then I grew up between Mexico and Spain, and you know, after that I moved to London and Los Angeles and then New York. So it's
been yeah, busy.
Yeah, exactly.
Enjoy moving around. So the show that you're mainly you're working on at the moment as a cinematographer is Man in the High Castle, which runs on Amazon Prime. I love the series. It was absolutely brilliant, amazingly well put together, and absolutely beautifully shot. I mean,
thank you.
Just stunning piece of work. How did you get involved with that?
Well, I did it back in the day, like a few years back. I did a series called Niño Santo, which is a series I did in Mexico with the guys from Canana. I don't know if you're familiar with them, like Diego Luna and the guy El Garcia.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they have a company. So they had this idea of doing a series, like a high quality American style series for Mexico, which had never been done. This is like 2005, I think, or 2006. No, a little later, sorry. A little later, like 2009. Sorry, yeah. It's confusion. So we put together this series. It's only 6 episodes, but that series, it was so well done that it ended up in the hands of Scott Free, and because they wanted to do an adaptation and all that. So I guess Scott Free saw the series and they saw my work. And then when they were starting to develop this, my name came up. So I think it was David Zucker, who's head of Ridley Scott's TV wing in Scott Free, who sort of suggested me for this. And then together with the showrunner, Dan Percival, who's from England.
Yes.
Who they between the two of them sort of suggested me. And then, you know, people saw the reel, they responded to it. And they thought I would be a good fit, even though I didn't do the pilot. I was able to, they sort of like the style for me to come into the show.
Yeah. So you started working on that. Were you aware of the book beforehand?
Yes. I mean, I've always been a Philip K. Dick fan. I actually didn't read the book before the series. I mean, of course, when I sort of got, you know, to talk to them, I read the book and I did all kinds of research. But I'm, I mean, one of the reasons why I ended up making films was Blade Runner. So I was always huge fan of the book, of Ridley Scott's film. I was one of the reasons why I like, and the cinematography in that film. So when I saw, you know, this project, I was like, wow, this is like a dream come true, because I always love that style. I always love Ridley Scott and Philip K. Dick, which is such a visionary, you know?
Yeah.
So, and then, you know, I knew that Philip K. Dick's daughter was involved in the project. So it sounded like a really authentic to the original idea, at least, you know. And so that was That was the idea. So yeah, I mean, to short answer is yes, I was aware of the book, even though I hadn't read it.
So what was the first thought that went through your head when you sort of presented with this idea of shooting a retro futuristic Nazi version of the USA?
I know. I was, you know, I was, I don't want to say, I was a little nervous because, you know, a lot of my background was always in shooting stuff that's very realistic, very documentary styled, a lot of available light. So, I mean, of course, I consider myself capable of doing different styles, but I was a little bit like, wow, this is so a little different of what I've done.
Yeah.
So, I mean, of course, it was challenging. And the thought of challenge was very appealing to me also. So I thought, this is awesome. This is amazing. This is a really good chance to do something that I really, really like. The style that I really, really like, and I haven't really been able to explore that much, you know? So that was sort of my first thing, was really just a lot of excitement to be working in this dream project, in a way, you know?
Yeah. How do you light to kind of style a show like that? Because it seems to be quite a sort of, it's obviously a very dark, oppressive show. Does the sort of lighting and the way that you shoot it evolve with that?
Yeah. I mean, I guess we, even though we have a kind of very strong style of lighting, we always try to make it sort of realistic in a way, based in reality in a way. So, I mean, there's always conversations when we talk to the directors and the scripts, when the scripts come and you start to sort of read what the scenes are about. I mean, we approach it like a film in a way. What is the scene about, and what do we want the audience to feel here? Do we want to show oppression, or do we want to counterpoint that with something different?
Yeah.
I mean, so based on that, we design the lighting for that specific scene. Sometimes that means a lot of smoke, high contrast, silhouettes, dark. Or sometimes it means completely the opposite. Like really, I don't know if you saw season one and one of the episodes, there's just a big scene when they have this a lot of conversations in Smith's home. And we try to make that a little more like the dream of the 1950s America, you know, like Norman Rockwell. So very kind of polished, but very pastel. And so that was kind of very visual counterpoint of what normally we would do. And it was so effective because it's so creepy when you have the content of the scenes are really dark and you have this kind of a very stylized and clean visual on the lighting and the camera, you know? So that was an interesting experiment. So I guess we always try to approach it from what's the scene about, what's the character going through, what do we want to say?
Yeah, yeah. You've also got a few different areas which are stylistically different, because you've got the Japanese side and you've got the German side, because America's kind of split down the middle, and then you've got the no man's land in the middle. How do you set things up to shoot those, sort of to make those look different?
We sort of develop on the first year between what the pilot was and how we evolved from the pilot to the series with Dan Percival and with the directors that came over. We kind of develop a Bible of what each place is, you know? And I mean, we sort of discovered this as we went through, even though there were so very strong concepts on the art, like, you know, the color palette in the Nazi world, it's a lot different from the one in Japan and the Japanese states, and a lot of different from the neutral zone. We kind of end up developing a Bible in which we give to the directors. But other than that, we kind of just by heart know that, you know, San Francisco is a little more, it's maybe a little warmer. The cameras are maybe a little more free. It's not as architectural. Yeah. As a Nazi world, the Nazi world, we always tend to be very like structured, very architectural, solid, very kind of stark. There's almost no color, and we always end up shooting it a little cooler, you know, in terms of colors.
Yeah.
And then sometimes you have warm colors in the East Coast too, but you know, there's kind of as a general idea. We tend to do that. And then the neutral zone had its own sense. It had a lot of, we did a lot of handheld, more like Steadicam, just a little more free camera. And I mean, the lighting was maybe a little more pastel and more like, you know, as compared to the other two locations, you know?
Yeah, yeah. No, I get that. It really, particularly the German side, very much stands out. You got that. There are times when it feels a bit almost black and white with red.
Exactly.
You know, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, and there's really the great thing about the team that we have is when you get to a set, the concepts are all there. You know, everyone knows what colors are allowed and not allowed. So when you get to a set, you really, I mean, it makes it so easy because the colors are all there, you know, and then you just kind of give the signature with the color of the lighting. But in general, it's really amazing what between wardrobe and set design, set dressing, and production design, and everyone's really on it. So I think we really achieved a very solid look because everyone really talks a lot. We talk so much, like every time when we're scouting and at the beginning of the season, we just talk about concepts and what do we want to say and what colors are. Every time they want to show a new wardrobe, they always show it to me or to Jim. And we always look at everything, all the colors. If we have doubts, we test. So it's almost like a movie. We do a lot of prep, and in that prep, we really design the colors to be within the palette. Like sometimes we discard locations because they just don't adapt to what we're looking for, you know? So
yeah,
it's great to be, it's amazing to have that much support visually, you know, and especially on television, I mean, or, you know, streaming.
Yeah.
You know, as compared to a movie.
Yeah, yeah. You mentioned there's you aren't the only cinematographer. There's you and James Hawkinson as well, who's the other guy.
Exactly.
Are you alternating episodes on this? Yeah.
Yes, we do, just because of the nature of episodes are really chunky. So we end up doing an episode, and then while he shoots, I prep and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Even though we always end up shooting a lot of for each other. Like I do a lot of pickups for his episodes and he does for mine.
Right.
We always end up having a lot of scenes from each other and on their episodes, which is a lot of fun, you know?
Yeah.
And I mean, we work together on that and we always are sort of involved in all the conversations.
I was going to say, because if there's two of you working on it, does it end up with one person sort of taking more of a lead, or are you just collaborating all the way through to kind of create the style of the show?
Yeah, I mean, James did the pilot.
Right.
So I guess a lot of the concepts came from the pilot.
Right.
And also I was able to adapt from the pilot to the second episode, which means we, you know, everything that they wanted to kind of to give a little bit of a difference, I was able to have a lot of input there.
Yeah.
So even though his concepts were from original, we kind of developed those concepts into the series. Yeah. And then, but we do work, even though Jay has a lot of the original concepts, we collaborate a lot, and all the concepts are sort of shared. And we have a slightly different way of approaching things, but it's great because it gives that little bit of texture to each episode, even though it's still within the same style.
Yeah.
Just because the way he approaches architecture is a little different to the way I do it, or lighting. And those subtleties are really great because they really give the series that extra layer, you know?
Yeah, yeah. With a show like that, when you are dealing with a sort of altered America, where are you shooting? Is it Washington and where else was it?
We shoot in, but the pilot they shot in Seattle, in Washington State.
Okay.
And then the series we do in Vancouver, in Canada.
Oh, okay.
Which is great, but it's a challenge because Vancouver looks nothing like like New York, or, you know, we have very limited exterior.
So that sort of brings me on to my next question. How much CGI are you using versus a sort of physical set and real world stuff?
We try to do as much as possible in camera. Like we really try to do as much as possible. Sometimes they do help doing some set extensions to erase some like glass buildings in the background, or sometimes in Vancouver, just get rid of those green lush mountains in the background, you know? Yeah. And, but we do, I would say maybe 80% in camera and then maybe 20% of enhanced sets.
Yeah.
Which are, it's great because we do try to make it that it's not, how do I say that, it feels natural, it feels within the story.
Yeah.
So a lot of people sometimes don't realize that some shots have CGI.
That's some of my favorite CGI work. I remember a video that went round for, I think it was Boardwalk Empire, the HBO show, just nuts amount of CGI that they put in there that you would never, ever know.
Exactly.
I love that sort of stuff because, you know, it shows you how far the CGI stuff has come that you, you know, the best CGI to me is the stuff that you just don't even realize.
Exactly. And, you know, we use CGI as a way of enhancing the story and just make it more immersive without being too in your face, you know, like...
Yeah.
And that's something that changed a little bit from the pilot to the series. And the pilot's a little more, the presence of the CGI is a little more overwhelming, and it's almost like a statement of this world. Mm-hmm. As you ease into the series and even more season two, this CGI becomes almost, I don't want to say unnoticeable, because of course, I mean, some of the worlds are not... Yeah. real, but at least it really, you stay in the story. You don't really think, oh wow, this is, you know, you kind of stay sucked into the story, which is the objective of everyone doing the show.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
What would you say is the most interesting experience you've had whilst you've been shooting the show?
I would say just being able to find, I mean, the most interesting thing for me is the people involved. And the fact that everyone from the top, like from Richard Hughes and David Zucker, all the people above, all the way to the last electrician, or even the day players who come and work with us for one day here and there, everyone is so much into the story that it's such a pleasure to work on this show, because everyone is a storyteller and really is passionate about it. So that's probably the best experience, the best overall experience that I've had with this, you know, like everyone's into the story. So people sort of put away their own personal interest for the bigger good of the show, you know, and everyone does that. So it's really something.
Yeah, yeah. Now, it's an amazing show that with one of the best sort of final, I think it was the final shot of the first series, which we won't mention because don't want to spoil it for anybody. But yeah, that I just thought was fabulous. So and it's one of those moments where you go, what the hell just happened?
I know. And there was so much thought put into that too. It's crazy because it's just one shot, but there was so much thought involved in that, you know, everything that you see that I won't describe too, but every little piece of art that you see and all the way that he reacts, everything, all the wardrobe, everything's so thought of that it's amazing. Because it really works at the end, you know, people really react to that.
Yeah, I'm so looking forward to seeing the next season of it, because I think I binged watch it over a couple of days. just went through the whole thing, so it's brilliant. You've also worked on another show which I love, and we're massively behind on over here, which was Person of Interest.
Yeah. I did season four on that show.
Okay, yeah. So how did you get pulled into that? Was it just a case of you were around New York? Because they shoot that in New York, don't they?
Yeah, they shoot in New York. Yeah, I was in New York, and then a director that worked with me on another show I did, one of the first years I did was named Believe.
Oh, yeah.
They knew they were looking for someone on that show, so that he called me and recommended me and said, hey, you know, I work on the show, and I'm a kind of a recurring director. I want to see if I can recommend you for this. I'm like, yeah, sure, why not? So I came in, and I got interviewed by a lot of people, and then I ended up shooting it. I mean, it was a lot of fun. It was very challenging, just because the amount of stuff that happens, as you know.
Yeah,
but that was a lot of fun, and, you know, learn a lot, and I work with some great people.
Yeah, it's a fantastic show. It's another one that, even though it's a much more standard sort of action adventure show, it's incredibly well shot. I mean, it's really beautiful, and they do such a good job on it. It's Jonathan Nolan, isn't it? One of the creators of it. So again, a great project to be involved with. I think we're about a season behind over here. So.
Yeah, that was it. Was great because also responded to that, because I'm not a big fan of coming into a project that's already been established. So on this one, it was so well shot, and there were some open ideas to kind of experiment. That's sort of how I was pulled into it, you know, because I was interested in this sort of urban noir style and very kind of stylized modern, but realistic at the same time.
It's a show we describe, I think, frequently as being kind of Batman-esque without having a guy in a cape in it, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, completely, like this anti-hero heroes, you know, who just hit me.
That's a fantastic show. Just a bit more about you, some more kind of general questions. Which people inspire you?
Well, you mean the filmmakers or in general?
Yeah, filmmakers and in general, let's say.
And in general. I think I'm passionate when I'm sort of inspired by people who have really good knowledge of their craft.
Yeah.
But sort of know how to translate that into something. It's not just, they just don't show off, but just to put an example, like Roger Deakins, the cinematographer, right?
Yeah.
He has such a mastery for the craft, but at the same time, he's not a slave to the craft. He's so versatile and he'll do an ugly scene if the scene needs that, or he'll do like a stylized project and better than anyone, or he'll do like a really not pretty looking project if it's what the story calls for.
Yeah.
That's sort of what inspires me. And just to put an example, like a musician, someone like this German guy, Nils Fromm, I don't know if you're familiar with him.
Yeah, name doesn't ring a bell.
He's this guy who's kind of gets a piano, he plugs some kind of computers and stuff. So he's basically like hacking a piano. He's such a good pianist, like classic pianist, but at the same time, he's such an incredible musician that everything he does is so like, out of this, like, it's really inspiring because I see that. I'm like, I want to do that. I want to be able to have the tools available to me photography wise and being able to change them and pull them together into this kind of weird thing and make a result out of it, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm always, or just, you know, same thing with writing, like some, you know, when I read a book and I'm just someone who's able to write something with the language that takes you to a different place.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what I'm inspired about, you know, all kinds of crafts, of painting and film, and of course film, because that's a more immediate, you know.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Any art or any craft or architecture, anything is really makes me really want to strive for that, you know, like really kind of control the craft.
Yeah. Yeah. What would you say is the best piece of advice somebody's given you?
That's a really good question. I don't know. I think I'd probably, it's hard to know where I saw it exactly, but I think I saw it one of those master classes. And then it was kind of reiterated. The message was kind of given to me around when I was at film school, some people that came over to give some lectures, you know, all from like Tom Hanks to Dante Spinotti or like really incredible people, David Lynch. And they always kind of made an emphasis on listening, you know, like really have to learn to listen, because sometimes when we, as a cinematographer, you read a script, you visualize it and you have so many ideas, you want to come in and then you meet the director and you're like, you almost attack. And sometimes what you need to do is just listen to what they have to say, because sometimes they have a different idea of what they want to say.
Yeah.
And this being a collaboration, and since, you know, you work for the director, you have to listen, you know, and you have to listen to everyone. So I think that's what really one of the best advices I've gotten. And just learn to listen, even though you want to say a lot of things.
Yeah.
And it's great. It's a great tool in on the set.
Yeah.
When sort of getting crazy, just if you listen and you know, you listen to what the director wants to say, or the producer, or the, you know, and that's probably, it works great in film.
Yeah, that's a really good one. We've not had that before. I like that. What career do you think you'd be doing if you weren't a cinematographer?
I was very passionate about architecture.
Yeah.
I was almost about to get into architecture. And it's funny because my brother's an architect and we always end up talking about space and light and how a space will cause something on you. Like it would make you feel comfortable or uncomfortable or small or insignificant or powerful. So it's funny that in the end, it's kind of that, you know, it's, but if I wasn't, I don't know if maybe architect, maybe, I mean, photography has always been my thing since I was growing up. So maybe photographer, even though it's not far from this, I would say probably architecture is the one.
So what project are you doing next?
So, I mean, next, you know, season 3, all of that stuff still to be defined and all of that. Of course, I would jump into it because it's such a great project. Right now, you know, I'm reading some scripts through agents and stuff to maybe be able to do a movie, which I always enjoy trying to keep the balance between movies and streaming cable.
Yeah.
Because I think sometimes when you have Hikas is a big show. It's sometimes we're like have 4 units shooting and you have 100 people. I mean, with the days last year, we had 600 people on the set one day. And that's just incredible. So sometimes it's nice to be able to ground yourself with a small movie. I did a movie last year at the end of the year, which was great. A really tiny movie with a few characters, very intimate. And sort of you reconnect and realign with what storytelling is instead of being in the craziness of those big shows. So I'm just reading some scripts to possibly do something like that. And, you know, the commercials, a short, I might do a short film. Just stuff that I want to kind of combine to keep the balance between all the areas that I do, you know.
So we have a couple of final questions, which we ask everybody. First one is, what TV shows are you watching at the moment?
I'm watching Black Mirror, the English show, which is incredible. Even a lot of people say, oh, you know, it's the first two seasons are not. I think it's amazing. I still think it's
incredible.
It's so great production value. It's amazing the way that they shoot different styles of different episodes. It's really well done. Well done. And I watch The Nick. I don't know the TV show. Which I love that show. It's just incredible. And, you know, I wanted to start watching that Netflix show, The Queen, or I don't know what it's called, about the Queen.
The Crown, yes.
The Crown.
Yeah.
Yeah. But those are sort of the ones I'm watching currently.
And if you had the opportunity to work on any show, past, present, or future, what TV show would it be?
I mean, probably everyone says this. I love Game of Thrones. I really like.
Yes.
It's probably the one that you get the most. But, you know, I mean, The Nick would be amazing too, even though Steven Soderbergh shoots himself.
Yeah, yeah.
I would love to work on that show just because it's so efficiently filmed, so stylized, and the story is good.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there's a lot of shows around. I think there's so many good things around. Yeah. Those are the ones that I just kind of jump from the top of my head right now.
TV and film is blurring so much these days, just the quality of the stuff you get out. I mean, you know, you mentioned a few times the size of Man in the High Castle, and it really does look cinematic a lot of the time. It's a phenomenal piece of work. So I'm a huge fan of the first series, and I'm looking forward to seeing the second one. So
thanks so much. I think you're going to like it.
Yeah, I hope so. It's 16th of December, I think it's out. So I'm looking forward to seeing that. But thanks for coming on and spending a bit of time talking. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you. My pleasure. All right. For the opportunity. Thank you.
Bye-bye. So that was the interview with Gonzalo. I hope you really enjoyed that. Man in the High Castle is back for its second season on Amazon on Friday, December 16th. So this coming Friday. First season's all up there, so you can binge watch your way through that. Second season, I think he's dropped all in one go because it's an Amazon original series. So you should be able to binge your way all the way through the second season when that drops on Friday as well.
How many episodes is this first season?
10 episodes. It's 8 or 10 episodes. It's not many.
Okay.
So, but yeah, well worth going to watch if you've not seen it. Worth getting an Amazon account if you've not got one already. Definitely worth getting hold of. So that was the interview. Next up, we have some air dates. Surprisingly large amount of air date information this week. First up, we have a quick cancellation. Rain, which is the CW show which airs on Netflix over here, it was announced they're not getting a fifth season, apparently. They've done 4 seasons so far. They're about to start shooting the season 4 finale, and they informed producers that they weren't getting a 5th season. So hopefully
this is your last one.
It sounds like they'd already been told that it's possible that they weren't going to get the renewal this year. So they have been gearing the stories towards this being a final season with a possible out if it wasn't. They've now been told that it is definitely going to be the final season, so hopefully that means that they've got scripts and stuff organized so they can actually bring it to a reasonable close, and they've got enough time to do that. So we'll see what they do.
It's not getting enough.
It's CW, and CW are renowned for renewing pretty much everything. I mean, like last year they renewed every single show apart from
and added stuff.
Apart from one from the Contagion season series, they didn't renew last year, but that was the only one. Everything else got renewed. So you sort of at a point that if they're going to start putting more new shows on, they need to clear some of the lower end stuff out. And unfortunately, that means Rain is one of those. Whether we'll see any of the others go as well, I think Crazy Ex-Girlfriend was one that's not doing particularly well. So, but it's very difficult to sell with CW shows because of the fact that CW own everything that they make. Unlike a lot of networks that will, you know, you might have something that's airing on Fox, but it's actually made by CBS Studios. So they have to pay a license fee to CBS to air it. Whereas with all the CW shows, they're made by CW, Warner Brothers, or CBS, which are all part of the same company. I mean, although they do have odd licensing deals, like when CBS were airing Supergirl, they were having to pay a fortune back to Warner Brothers for licensing it, even though it's the same company, which seemed ridiculous, but that's just the way it was. So, as a general rule, if it's made internally, it's got a better chance of getting renewed, even though the numbers are lower. And CW is a smaller network. Generally, you can get away with much smaller numbers. It's that old adage about being chased by the bear. It's not that you have to outrun everybody. You just have to outrun the people that you're with, you know?
Yeah.
And it's the same with TV networks. It's exactly the same with TV networks.
Yeah, I mean, it's things like, I think The Flash gets 6 million or something, and it's a fantastic show, but it's not like Walking Dead numbers, so it's the same kind of thing as what you
said. But they're on
two
separate networks. So it's fine. You've just got to be higher than everybody else on your same network, you know. So in terms of changes, we've got quite a lot of stuff for January and February. Sherlock season
is really going to be crazy.
Yeah, it starts to get really crazy, particularly February gets really, really crazy. Although there's a lot of stuff in January as well.
Like, because was it me, you and Sophie were having a chat the other day, and I was like, yeah, there's a lot of stuff.
Crazy. You've got Sherlock season 4, which we're all expecting to come back fairly soon, and that was January 1st, so it's back New Year's Day, 8:30, for another 3 episodes, I think that is.
Is that the whole season?
That's the whole season. They're always that size. They're always only three or four episodes. It's really small. Unlike The Simpsons, which is also back in January, January 8th for the 28th season, that's back at 6:30. On January 8th for The Simpsons.
Is this ever going to end?
I don't know.
I mean, it doesn't need... I'm not one of the people that are like, is The Simpsons going to end? But I'm like curious.
I think
30, the only, 35, 40.
The only time they're like to end it is when one of the cast members die, I think. You know, when one of the major cast members it can no longer do it, or if somebody leaves, I think that may bring it to a close. But I think it's renewed for another 2 seasons anyway, so it's going to at least
28, 29.
I think it's going to at least get up to season 30. So you know, but we'll see. Legion, which was the show that you mentioned earlier, that comes to Fox on the 9th of February. That's coming. Oh, that's slightly out of place in the list. But anyway, yes. So that's coming to Fox on the 9th of February at 9 p.m, which is based on the Marvel X-Men character who is the son of Professor X in the comic books. Whether they'll make that connection actually in the TV show, it's difficult to tell.
I heard they're going to connect some things.
Yeah, originally they said there was going to be no connection, and now it sounds like there might be some connection. So we don't know.
So in February, we'll probably have The Walking Dead advertising Legion and 24, and you'll have 24, you know, you'll have them advertising each other.
I'm fairly sure you will.
Yeah.
No Offense Season 2, which was the cop drama from the creator of Shameless, that's back on the 4th of January as well. That's really, really good show, that, if you've not seen that. The first season of that was great. Really well put together. It's got Will Meller in it from Hollyoaks, who was probably in Hollyoaks before your time, actually. Will Meller is one of the cast members in that, but it's from the creators of Shameless. It's listed as a comedy drama, although it's a very, very dark comedy drama, I think it's fair to say. Also back on the 4th, you've got season 12 of Supernatural. So that's
which I'm about 12 seasons behind us.
Need to catch up on that. So yes, that's back for its 12th season on the 4th of January at 10 p.m.
Let's put it on hold for 10 years so I can, you know,
yeah, well, that's another show that keeps on going. It's the longest running drama that CW's ever had, because that up until then it was Smallville, which was 10 seasons, and Supernatural's now on 12. So, yeah, but fantastic, fantastic show. They'll just keep making it while the boys want to do it. It's great. That's on the 4th of January at 10 p.m. Unforgotten Season 2 coming to ITV stars Nicola Walker from Spooks as a murder detective. It's one of ITV's kind of standard police dramas, as far as I'm aware. So that's on 5th of January at 9 p.m. That's Unforgotten. You've got Hell on Wheels Season 5.
I didn't know that was still going.
Yes, that's the very last part of, I think it's Season 5B actually. It's the second half of Season 5. So that's the very last season. That's on the 8th of January at 9 p.m. That comes to TCM, which is a great show. And again, worth watching if you've not caught it. Blue Bloods, that's back on the 11th of January at 9 p.m. on Sky Atlantic. The World's Greatest Moustache, which happens to be attached to Tom Selleck playing a police chief. So that's back 11th of January. Grimm's final season. There was some reports saying it's starting on the 14th of February. I don't know how reliable that is, but Grimm's final season 6 apparently starting on W, the channel formerly known as Watch, on the 14th of February. More importantly, on the 14th of February, though, 24 Legacy lands at 9 p.m. on Fox. That was the interesting thing. So not gone to Sky One, it's gone to Fox. I do wonder if the fact that they're bringing back Strike Back had anything to do with the fact that they didn't pick up 24, possibly.
Maybe, you could start both.
Yeah, you could. And they are running at different times, I guess. But 24 Legacy coming to Fox. It's interesting, we've had a couple of shows, because Legion is a Fox show, 24 Legacy is a Fox US show as well. Yeah. So we're actually getting Fox US shows finally coming to Fox UK, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah, actually makes more sense.
So. Yeah, it does make a lot more sense. So 24 Legacy coming to Fox UK, 14th of February at 9 p.m, which sees Corey Hawkins take over from Kiefer Sutherland as the new star, or having a very, very bad day.
They all have bad, long 24 hours.
Although in this case, it isn't technically 24 hours. It's 12, I think.
It'll be 12 with a time skip again, which did work better in season 9.
Yes.
Season 9? Living Up Day.
Yeah. So there's that. There's a show called Falling Water, which is a supernatural drama about three strangers that share the same dream. First season of that starting on the 15th of January on Amazon Prime.
That sounds slightly similar to Sense8.
Yes, that's exactly what I thought when I read the synopsis for it. Yeah. So I don't know, but we'll see. And Walking Dead Season 7B, we don't know an exact date for this yet. I think it was the 14th.
I'm guessing the 13th of February.
So,
on the Monday.
Yeah, it's probably on the Monday, so it's probably going to be the 13th of February. So next week on TV, there's one show which we actually missed off last week and actually aired on Monday the 12th, but you can go and get it off iPlayer, called Time Commanders. If you've been a fan of the computer game Total War, or if you remember a show called Time Commanders that was around 10 years ago, it's the same show where it basically takes historical reenactments of battles done in the Total War engine, you know, the Total War video game.
Yeah.
That TV show was the original development platform that they eventually made the Total War games out of.
Huh.
So the Creative Assembly made the Time Commanders TV show and then made the video game, I think, afterwards.
There was a new game that came out recently, or I keep hearing about it. I'm not sure if it's out yet or not, but I keep hearing about another game for it.
Total War Warhammer, yes. Warhammer. You did hear about it because we talked about it on this show, because we interviewed the guys at Creative Assembly a few months back. So, Total War Warhammer, which is out at the moment. But this is actual historical battles, not Warhammer battles. And it basically, they have two teams who go up against each other, each taking a side in a historical battle to see if they can change the outcome of what the historical battle was. This version is hosted by Greg Wallace. It starts on Monday the 12th at 9 p.m. But as you'll probably listen to this after that, you can go and get it on iPlayer, and then it's on BBC Four. Also returning this week quite late is Elementary Season 5, which returns on the 13th of February at 9 p.m. Basically, they usually started this in sort of September, October, but they've moved it because they wanted to take the mid-season break out this year. So Elementary will be running straight through for its fifth season. So yes, we're getting sort of both Sherlocks back around about the same time.
Do you know if Nashville's taking a mid-season break, or is that running straight through?
I'm not sure.
That's on like episode 16 this last week.
I suspect that started late enough to sort of run it straight through, I would have thought, but I'm not sure.
Okay.
Timeless, which if you've watched anything on Channel 4 or E4 recently, just anything, it's been advertised like crazy, which is Goran Visnjic from ER as a bad guy who steals a time machine in order to change history. That's starting on the 14th of February, I think at 9 p.m. I haven't got a time on here, but it's 9 or 10 p.m. on E4.
I think it's 9,
It's 9 p.m. So yeah, that's Timeless, which looks like it could be quite good fun. I don't think it's had the best ratings in the US, but we'll see where it goes. Mom, which is on ITV2. It's the Anna Faris sitcom about a dysfunctional mother and daughter. 15th of December at 25 past 12 in the morning.
What? Why?
Because ITV2 seems to have inherited the drunk scheduling from E4. Because they run that. It's like Vampire Diaries. Yeah. Vampire Diaries runs at something like 12:45 now. It's absolutely ludicrous. So, yes, Mum is airing in the middle of the night for some reason. See it for season 4 on ITV2, 15th of December. Man in the High Castle, as we mentioned, starts on the 16th. That's for the second season of that. Brilliant. It's on Amazon Prime, so you can go and watch that. Season finale of Vicious, which was the TV show that had Ian McKellen and Derek Jacobi as Freddie and Stuart, who were an elderly gay couple that are living together. They're doing one final episode of that. That's on the 16th of December as a Christmas special at 9 p.m. There is a show called Van Helsing, which is a new sci-fi series, but it's airing on Netflix over here. That's on the 17th of December, which is loosely based on the Van Helsing characters, and it's a female descendant of Van Helsing. So it's that sort of Wyoming Earp kind of twist to Van Helsing, essentially. But that's coming to Netflix on the 17th of December. Midsummer Murders Season 19 starts on the 18th of December at 8 p.m. if you're into that sort of thing and want to go and watch that. And Murdoch Mysteries, which we've got a Christmas special coming. That's on Alibi on the 20th of December at 10 p.m. So that's everything for this week, unless you've got anything else you'd like to add, Matt?
No, I think I've said everything.
Yeah. All right, cool. So you can find us on geektown.co.uk. You can find Matt on entertainmenttalk.org. You can get in touch with us on podcast@geektown.co.uk. You can leave a message on the website post. You can find us at Geektown on Twitter, on Facebook at facebook.com/geektown, on YouTube at youtube.com/geektown, and on Instagram at geektownuk. That's everything. We shall see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.